else, from, you know, wedding dresses to music to heavy machinery to you name it, news, music, books, everything can be sold in a subscription model. Small business, large business, mom and pop, professional services. I've seen it work everywhere. Because what it's really about is taking a step back and saying, what is the forever promise I'm making with this person? What is the big problem I can solve for them? And how can I demonstrate my commitment to continuously being willing to evolve to provide the best solution to the people I serve?
You're an entrepreneur, and you make vital decisions that hopefully blossom into a business. You're the savvy, out-of-the-box risk-taker who believes wholeheartedly in the process of innovation. Innovation that will change the world. This is CEO Chat with Gresham Harkless, and you're about to embark on a journey through the awesome world of business. Gresham is the epitome of drive and desire as he works to help support small businesses and entrepreneurship. And you're about to learn from this entrepreneur how you can improve your odds of success in the business world. Welcoming the host of CEO Chat, here's Gresham Harkless.
Hello. This is Gresham Harkless from CEO Chat, powered by CBNation.co and Blue 16 Media, your choice for all your website design and digital marketing needs. And this was an awesome chat with Robbie Baxter. Robbie is a consultant and speaker who has been providing strategic business advice to Silicon Valley companies for over 20 years. She is the founder of the consulting firm Peninsula Strategies, LLC, and regularly presents to professional associations, leading universities, and corporations. She is also the author of The Membership Economy, which was featured on our CEO bookshelf. During the chat, we spoke about her background and what led her to start her business. We also talked about how entrepreneurs and business owners can move from transactional to membership, the importance of finding a niche to solve problems for, and how any business can incorporate practices from companies like Netflix and Adobe. This was an awesome chat filled with loads of great content. So what I want you to do is sit back and enjoy this CEO chat with Robbie Baxter.
All right, Robbie, are you still there with me?
I'm here.
Awesome. Well, what I wanted to do was just, you know, thank you for taking some time out of your schedule to come and speak to us about you and your book and your background. The first thing that I usually do is just kind of give you the floor and ask you if you could tell us a little bit about you, your background, and what kind of led you to start your business.
Sure. My name's Robbie Kelman Baxter, and I've been an independent consultant for the past 16 years. I focus on working with subscription business models, membership business models that use community and networks as a key component in their strategy. And I've been a consultant for most of my career. So before that, I worked a little bit in tech. And before that, I worked as a strategy consultant in big firm consulting. And the reason that I went independent was, you know, because like a lot of people, or especially a lot of women, when I had my second child, it became harder. It was harder for me to see the path to kind of what I had hoped to accomplish with my career working through traditional corporate structures. I got laid off while I was on maternity leave. I said, you know, I'm not going to let this happen to me again. And I'm going to focus on doing great work directly for my clients without any kind of organizational bureaucracy between me and the work. And, you know, the great thing about consulting is if you do good work, you get referrals and you get more work. And so there's, you know, nobody knows whether I'm at home with my kids or, you know, what else I'm doing with my life, as long as the work is good and the value is being added, I have a tremendous amount of flexibility. So that's kind of why I started Peninsula Strategies. And then 3 years ago, I wrote Membership Economy, which is my first and maybe only book, we'll see. But I wrote that because I had been gathering so much knowledge and building such a framework around questions that a lot of people were asking that I felt like I needed to codify it. And it did a couple of things for me. One of them is it forced me to create the frameworks that I was kind of using intuitively in all of my work and to really identify explicitly the patterns I was seeing in how the best companies were building long-term relationships with the customers they served. And it also allowed me to establish a brand, which brought in a whole new set of prospective clients. And then finally, it created a way that I could provide value to people who might never be able to hire me. You know, people who, you know, were all over the world, which has been pretty exciting, and small entrepreneurs, as well as, you know, the larger companies that I traditionally work with. So that's been a huge part of my business over the last several years.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear, you know, how everything got started, but, you know, it's a common thing that I hear, you know, with entrepreneurs and business owners that sometimes an unexpected thing happens and you just kind of have to redirect. And oftentimes you end up going down the path you should have been going anyways. There are always like hints in the past of maybe I should have started my business, and then something happens and it kind of leads you down that path whether we want to or not.
Totally. Yeah. I'm a very risk averse person. So I don't know that I would have jumped out on my own if I hadn't been pushed out of the nest.
Right. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. But you know, what makes it interesting is always when I always think about business, you know, I think a lot of people sometimes think that business owners are, you know, the ones that skydive and they're riding motorcycles. They're doing all these daredevil things. But I think at the heart of it, even there are some, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners that do that, of course. But I think also it's about kind of mitigating the risk. And I think that probably when you left the position you were in, you were able to kind of make a transition and kind of probably mitigate those risks as you made that transition too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when we were chatting earlier today, you talked about jumping into the deep end with the project that you've worked on. And for me, I've never been a deep end jumper. I've always been a toe tester. And that's how I started my business. So I started my business by kind of dipping my toe in the water with one small consulting project. And then I thought, well, if that consulting project goes well, let me see if I can find a second one. And all I was really asking was that I got paid a fair amount and that it was in the general realm where I had expertise. And it was only after I had four projects that I said, okay, I think that I can actually make a living for the next few years doing this. And that's when I invested in kind of starting to think about a business plan and also putting up a website.
All right, Robbie. So I guess, you know, you touched a little bit on, you know, what you're doing with Peninsula Strategies. Could you tell us a little bit more about kind of like what you do from that angle?
Sure. So as a consultant, what I do is I work with companies that are moving toward what I call the membership economy, which means they're moving away from transactions and towards an ongoing recurring relationship, often with a subscription pricing model, and that they're moving away from kind of thinking of their customers as this anonymous entity to really building an ongoing relationship with the people that they serve, a formal relationship. So sometimes I'm working with companies where they're saying, hey, we sell our business transactionally. You buy something and then you're done. Like you buy the car, you drive it off the lot. You go to the manicure salon, you get your nails done, you leave. You know, then it's your, you know, you never have to come back. You buy software in a package, you open it up, you put it on your computer, and the company doesn't even know you have it. That's kind of an anonymous transaction model. And a lot of those kinds of businesses are moving to a known relationship model with recurring pricing, subscription pricing, and often with a layer of community on that, and even a better usage of data that they're receiving on the members' behavior, which they then use to continually improve the experience. So businesses that are trying to move along that continuum, like either we want to go from transactional to subscription, we want to go from anonymous to relationship, we want to incorporate customer success as a key component of our strategy. Those are the kinds of companies that I work with. And I really help them get into all the details around, you know, pricing. Should we have a free option? How do we onboard new members? How do we manage retention? What do we do if people leave? How do we win them back? How do we think of our product roadmap when we're not doing it in terms of, you know, kind of big reveal annual new product releases, but rather an ongoing continuous improvement model? How do we change our product team? Those are the kinds of questions that I work on with my clients.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And yeah, that's something that I started noticing as well too. So like when I saw your book, I was like, wow, this is timely, because it seems that, and the biggest thing that I've ever seen is, you know, the phones where you used to pay one price and then you had your phone and then you had to go and renew again. But now they're moving to like more of a, I guess, a membership model or a monthly subscription base. And now you're kind of becoming part of a community because you're paying on a monthly basis to be a part of that specific network.
Yeah, absolutely. The friends and family kind of approach, where if you bring in other people to your phone provider, you get a better rate. That's membership economy, making the pricing really simple. So, you know, I remember, you know, when I first had, you know, we have three teenagers and they all have phones. So we're a five phone family, and like figuring out the right plan, like you really have to be an expert on their pricing. And this is a note to entrepreneurs. If your pricing is so complicated that your customers feel like they have to become experts on your pricing, that's a sign that they're going to lose trust in you. People take complicated pricing as a signal that the company's trying to trick them. So for example, you know, the two biggest culprits in our modern society, I'd say, are the telcos, the cell phone companies, and the airlines, right? Like if you don't like the price that you're offered on an airline, just hang up and call back, because you'll get a different price.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I guess it's to the same degree, like the contracts itself too, because it's like, okay, this seems like they're trying to trick me into doing something. So I'm just going to move forward, but I have no idea what I just signed up for.
Right. They're locking you in. It's handcuffs as opposed to a magnet, right? One of the things that's been really important for Netflix since their inception is that they are able to say cancel anytime. And that's why they don't offer annual subscriptions. You know, they only offer monthly, because they really believe in the value of flexibility for their customers. They believe that is a huge piece of the value of being a Netflix subscriber.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I like what you said too, handcuffs instead of magnets. So that's very powerful, because I think oftentimes, you know, when we are business owners, sometimes we're trying to get people to sign the contract and we want them to stay with us for a year or 2 years or however long. But you're saying that one of the things that you've seen from successful companies like Netflix is that they've been a lot more based on community, and they have that flexibility where people can come and go as they want to.
Yeah, they're based on trust. You know, it's funny. I have a little rescue dog, Mona. She's super cute. And, you know, it's funny because we used to have this dog where when you'd open the front door, the dog would tear out of the house, right? Looking for adventure, right? And Mona, like, you open the door and she skids to a halt at the threshold, because she knows she has it really good here and she's already been on the streets in her life. This is me creating a story for her, by the way.
No worries.
She's spoken personally to me about this, but I infer from, you know, the story that we got from the rescue organization that, you know, she was found kind of on the streets of Hayward, there's a town nearby. And she is going to stay here. Like, I don't have to tie her up and lock her in, because she wants to be here. And that's what you want from your customers. You want your customers to skid to a stop when they think they might be leaving you and say, no, 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 can't you provide that benefit for me? You know, it's kind of that feeling if you have a great vendor that you work with or a great store that you work with, and you're like, but I really want to buy it from you, because I know you'll take care of me. I don't want to go to another store. I don't want someone else to fix the electrical. I want you to fix the electrical because you do such a good job and everything works together. That's the way you want your customers to be talking about what you provide. You provide the full solution. And when they notice something else that they think you might be able to do, they come and tell you, because they want to have a deeper relationship with you and not have to find someone else.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I love that example. My dog, I think she's kind of a mix between both. She tries to run away when I open up the door, but at the same time, she also comes back because I think she knows she has to eat at some time. So I understand exactly what you mean. So I guess for, you know, those business owners that are running maybe a yoga, fitness studio, a car wash, this membership model and the membership economy is something that they can incorporate. It's not something that there's a certain segment that can incorporate that. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, so when I wrote the book, I actually, because I'm, you know, I'm a very analytical, rules-based person. So I was trying to think, like, what are the cases when these principles don't apply? And what I realized was it applies to every business, big and small, public corporations, private corporations, not-for-profits, old line businesses, new businesses, digital businesses. The only place where it really, like, I found that it, my principles are not useful are when sales and marketing don't matter. So for example, I spoke at a Vistage, like a Vistage national conference, and someone came up to me and said, I own a fleet of fishing boats, commercial fishing boats. We sell our product every day at the same marketplace for market prices. What can we do around membership? And I thought, well, no, because you don't have customers, right? They just, their business is all about the operational efficiency, and it has, you know, nothing to do with relationship. Another example is if you have a regulatory or patent advantage or a geographic advantage. If you're the gas, if you're the last gas station for 100 miles, you know, you don't really have to have a relationship with people because they're going to see that, they're going to realize that they have no other choice and they're going to buy from you. Even if they don't like you, even if you don't take good care of them, even if your little mini mart doesn't have good candy selections, right? They're going to stop with you. Same thing if you're the only drug in town, you know, the only pharmaceutical in town that fixes their health issue, but your prices are expensive or you don't think about the relationship, that's okay because I need you. But everybody else, from wedding dresses to music to heavy machinery to you name it, news, music, books, everything can be sold in a subscription model. Small business, large business, mom and pop, professional services. I've seen it work everywhere. Because what it's really about is taking a step back and saying, what is the forever promise I'm making with this person? What is the big problem I can solve for them? And how can I demonstrate my commitment to continuously being willing to evolve to provide the best solution to the people I serve?
Awesome. 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 Yeah, that, you know, that's very powerful. And I guess essentially, like, if you don't have a monopoly in whatever area, then you're going to have to try to build that community, try to build that connection. And definitely, you know, over your book, you talked about some of the things that, you know, big or small businesses can do to kind of do that. Could you, I guess, tell us a little more about, like, some tips or tidbits or advice that you would give to those small, the medium-sized business owners that might want to try to incorporate that?
Yeah, absolutely. Here's what I would suggest. Take a step back and look at your top, let's say, 5 to 10 customers that you probably know by name. These are the ones that you say, God, if we could just manufacture more guys like John, you know, more guys like Gresh, you know, those are the kind of people that we want to serve because they buy our products regularly, because they recommend, you know, they refer us to others, because they give us candid feedback, because they kind of utilize the full range of services that we consider ourselves really good at offering. They use us in the way we intended to be used. Look at those people and think to yourself, what is the bigger promise that I'm making to them? And what do these people have in common? And how can I focus my business more on solving their problem? So for example, let's say that you have a store that sells, you have a music store. So you sell sheet music and you sell, you know, starter violins and pianos and what have you, and tuners, and, you know, and you notice that your best customers are families with children just getting started, right? That would have huge implications for what you carry in the store, but it would also have implications on what your forever promise is, because they're going to look to you for recommendations on piano teachers, reminders of when it might be time to upgrade to the next level of instrument, right? So like if you have a, you know, for example, violins, guitars, stringed instruments, you can buy a small one or a big one, depending on how big your child is. You can get information on when there's going to be competitions for prizes, prestigious awards, advice on high school and summer programs, all of that. You could become a real community for families of musical kids, right? And it's scary the first time you start moving toward that, because you might say, well, but we also sell sometimes to this professional musician down the street, and we also sell to this mom who just took up the guitar, and we also sell to, you know, this guy who's been playing the trumpet since he was 12 but doesn't play that often. And it's okay. It's not like you have to turn them away. You want to optimize your business for the people that you really want to take care of, and you want to look for a way to build a forever relationship. So you might say, instead of renting an instrument until you decide not to. You rent the instrument and we reach out to you when it's time to, you know, time to come in and swap it out, because that's, you know, a really important thing. Or, and it comes with some music, or it comes with, you know, you can get a few lessons every year, or, you know, I mean, there's just different things that you could incorporate into your offering to make it especially meaningful for a family with children that are musical. Car washes, a lot of car washes are moving toward a subscription, kind of a membership model, where for 30 or 40 bucks, it's usually the price of two to three car washes, you get unlimited car washes. And that creates all kinds of benefits if you're the kind of person that likes to have a really clean car, because if you come more than twice a month, you're getting a great deal. And, you know, a lot of people also see other benefits, like, well, if I have a subscription, I can just flash my card and then I don't even have to get out. I don't even have to go in and talk to anybody. I don't have to have any interactions with people. I can just quickly get my car handled. So it's just thinking about solving the problem. The problem is I want my car to be clean all the time. And if a bird poops on it, I want to be able to go back in and not think, oh, that's another $11. Right. I just want to go in and get that cleaned. Solving the problem for people who care about having a clean car, solving the problem for people who want to get, you know, the best advice, solving a problem for people, you know, just it's thinking bigger about the problem. And I would argue that small business owners actually have an advantage here, because you actually know your customers, right? Like Amazon, they have to rely on data. But, you know, John's hardware store on the corner, John probably knows the people in his neighborhood that do a lot of repair projects. He knows them. He knows their names. He knows the projects they work on. He probably knows if they have kids and what they like to do in their spare time. And so that's what gives you the opportunity to really optimize the experience for the people you serve. It's that really knowing the customer.
No, that makes perfect sense. And you're exactly right. Kind of like looking at it from a David versus Goliath standpoint, it's you, even though we're smaller or might have smaller businesses or leaner businesses, it makes us a lot quicker to be able to go and kind of do a quicker kind of analysis of our clients, or even just maybe sitting down and thinking like, what was the last thing that this person bought when they came into the store, or what type of things that people go to car washes value? Is it that they don't have to go out, you know, step out of their car and actually talk to people? So it sounds like helps people out as far as kind of communicating those values for signing up for that membership as well. Would that be correct to say?
Yeah. And I would even go the other way. Like, you want to pick the customers that you most want to serve. So if you think of a car wash, like, just, you know, in the spirit of full confession, true confessions, like, I probably get my car washed like every 2 months, maybe, right? If something happens that makes the car really dirty, I'll take it to the car wash. But most of the time, I don't really care that much. I'm not, as great as I am, I am not a great customer to a car wash organization, right? In contrast, my neighbor, that car looks like it just rolled off the showroom floor almost 100% of the time, right? That person is a great customer because they care about their car being clean. So part of it is knowing who your best customers are and optimizing for them. Because if you try to be all things to all people, you end up with a watered down product that's not amazing for anyone. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, even though like we're saying it and it sounds so obvious, but like when you're actually at that moment of changing the way you serve customers, so some customers won't be as well served, you feel like you're leaving business on the table, but you've got to do it. And an example is, I featured in the book, Adobe moved from, you know, they're the software company for designers. They had a packaged software that a lot of people bought. And then when they introduced Adobe Creative Cloud, which was basically their whole suite of products being offered as a service, you know, in other words, you subscribe every month, it's in the cloud. It had way more functionality and it was great for professional designers, but for people who were just like hobbyists or moonlighters on the weekend, they were like, but the 4-year-old version worked fine for my very simple needs. And now you're forcing me to pay monthly. So they lost all the moonlighters, or a lot of the moonlighters and a lot of the hobbyists. But for the people that are professional designers, the new product was so much better that even, and they knew this, so they were willing to lose a chunk of customers so that they could really serve well the people that they were optimized for. And that was a really smart strategic move, although a very scary one before they did it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, and that was going to be my follow-up question. You know, how do people actually, do they, like you mentioned, you know, like we started talking about in the beginning, do they put their toe into the water and see if it's going to work? Do they test out a lot of things before they kind of make that leap? Did you find that Adobe did that, or they just kind of say, okay, this is what we're going to do and we're just going to transition over?
Yeah, no, they did a lot of testing. The bigger the company, the scarier this kind of change is. The more established the business, because you have people on your boat already, right? Like if you make a sharp turn and someone falls off the boat, that's a problem. Whereas if you have a little speedboat and there's nobody on it but the driver and the skipper, right? You know, you can make a sharp turn because both of you can hang on. And so what these bigger companies do, or these longer standing companies do, first of all, they do analysis. They look at who their audience, and analysis sometimes sounds like a scary word, but like as a small business owner, you just look at who are my customers and you say, okay, so how many of them come more than once a month and how many of them come less than once a month? Okay, let me look at the ones that come more than once a month and think about what do they have in common and what would they really like? Maybe I'll ask them what they'd really like, right? And you sort of keep working and then you say, what would happen? You do some scenario planning, which again is a big word for a very simple idea, which is you say, what would happen if everybody that doesn't come at least twice a month stopped coming at all? And everybody that came twice a month didn't come anymore. How much money would I lose? Because that's like the worst case scenario, right? All of the customers that you're not optimized for, they all leave. And the customers that you're optimizing for don't change their behavior, right? And then you say, well, what if they improved by 10%? And what if I only lost half of the people that I'm not optimizing for? And you sort of can start to look at different situations. And hopefully you realize like, wow, even if things go really, really wrong, it's not terrible. That's one thing that these big companies have done. So I'm sure Adobe did that kind of analysis. Second thing they did is they did a test in a small geographically isolated market. And I think if they did it, if I'm remembering right, in New Zealand, the first test, to see what happens when you move to subscription. How do people react? Does anybody, who cancels? Who subscribes? Of the people who subscribe, how happy are they? So they had some good evidence that people actually really loved it and were not bothered by the price increase.
Exactly. No, that makes perfect sense. And I think even, you know, even though Adobe obviously is a large company, but, you know, even smaller companies or even startups can do those types of testing. So maybe it's starting out with just one client and you're doing that kind of analysis and you're seeing what they like, or you're looking and maybe you had that list of 5 to 10 clients that you mentioned before, and you are just kind of drilling down and doing that analysis to figure out what problems you can solve for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. So I wanted to ask you too, like you mentioned digital entrepreneurs, so people that kind of create membership sites and things like that, that are more like online. And that's obviously something that we've been pushing or going to be pushing going into this new year. And we are trying to build a membership community around some of the premium content that we're providing for our entrepreneurs and business owners. So what advice would you give for people like us or other maybe digital entrepreneurs that are trying to build their subscription base and things that you've seen as best practices?
Yeah, oh, that's a great question. So there's a bunch of things that come to mind. You already have a loyal listener base. So your brand is known and people understand what they can expect from CEO Blog Nation. They kind of understand what they can expect from you personally. So that's a great start. And then what you want to do is consider what else would those people want? What have they been asking me for that I have not been able to provide? What would I do if one of those people was, this is always a test I like to use, if they were my cousin, my best friend, right? And they said, hey, I want everything you can do for me to help me be successful. What else do you got? So probably like what you might say if that was a family or friend is, well, let's see, why don't you come over and tell me your business strategy and I'll give you some advice that's customized for you, right? That would be one thing that you might, right. You might say, oh, you know what? I'm going to create some kind of more advanced content for you. And there's 4 or 5 other guys that I know that are in my community that are kind of at your level with similar challenges. You know, let's just do a webinar with you guys and I'll create some content that's kind of more advanced for you. And I'll also introduce you so that you guys can support each other and be accountability partners. You know, so you start to think about like, what are the things that they would want that they're not getting so far, but that would be the next step. And that's what goes into the membership offering. The mistakes I've seen are that a lot of people just create certain elements in their membership model, either because that's what other people do or because they have it available. So for example, oh, I have these old white papers. I'll put those behind the firewall and say that you get access to 27 white papers on, you know, entrepreneurship. But they're lousy white papers and they're out of date and you used to give them away for free, right? So they're not really good content. It's better to have one really awesome piece of content than 27 old things that are kind of related. This whole throw in everything in the kitchen sink into your membership, I think, is really bad, because if the first thing that a new member sees is a lousy old white paper from 3 years ago that's not very good, they're going to think there's no value. You don't want to make them hunt around for the really good nuggets. It's better to just say, here's the 5 nuggets that you get. So that's one thing I've seen. The other thing is that in building community, a lot of times people want to lurk for a while before they start posting. So if somebody comes, it's kind of like nobody wants to be the first person to the party, right? You want to come and there's lots of people. It's kind of weird when you get there and the hall is sort of empty and the caterers are sort of standing around, right? But somebody has to be the first person to the party to make it feel like a party. So, you know, what do when we have a party, right? You tell your friends, come on time, come early, right? And so that when the other people come, it's not awkward. Sort of the same, if you're going to build if you want to build community as a key element of your offering, make sure that there's some people there already when the others arrive so that they're getting value when they come, even if they don't post. So you want to create some energy there as well. You want to leverage kind of what I think of as like offline with online. So you might have an annual live event. You might do, like, I know people who do meetups when they travel for their community. So like, hey gang, I'm going to be in, you know, Menlo Park, California on May 5th. We're going to meet at Cafe Baroni at 7 a.m. Coffee's on me, right? That kind of thing to bring people together, because then after you go, they're all connected by you and by the community. So those are some of the things that I would recommend. And another mistake I see is like you have finite content, but you want people to stay forever. So like, let's say that you have a program and it's 8 steps. Well, if it's 8 steps and really the optimal way to go through those 8 steps is over 8 weeks, then your membership should, like, what are you giving them? Like after week 8, the value goes way down, right? It's just the community. So your pricing should reflect that. So you might say new members, you know, it's $100 to join and then it's $10 a month thereafter, right? Or something like that. Because people do all these crazy things. Like they have 8 weeks of content, but they're hoping that people stay for a year, or they...
Right.
You know, all the value is absorbed early and then they wonder why people don't stay. So anyway, those are a few things. Does that help you, or are there specific questions you have that I didn't hit on?
No, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think that was one of the things that we were trying to figure out, how best to kind of create that content, what content might actually draw people in. But I think even, you know, what you mentioned earlier on was just making sure that you drill down and figure out exactly who are your best clients that you worked with and how to basically solve their problems so that they're lifelong fans and lifelong customers and lifelong clients is the idea. So once you kind of figure that out, you're not trying to be all things to all people, but you're working basically from those 5 to 10 people and then trying to create something for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, awesome. Awesome. So I know you mentioned some of the reasons that people might want to incorporate membership models into their business. Are there any other things that, you know, you didn't already touch on that you can say that this might be something else that people should consider if they're thinking about maybe doing a membership model?
Yeah, a couple things. One is that you want to start from the bottom of your funnel and work your way back up. So you want to start with product market fit for that membership offering or that subscription offering. You want to be confident that if somebody signed up for this offer, if a person in your target market signed up for the offer, they would stay forever, right? In other words, they would say, this is exactly what I was looking for. I have no reason to look for other things unless something really changes in my life. And if you don't feel confident that that is the case for your forever promise, do some more work on it. So for example, let's say that we're talking about your membership model. So you want to feel like, okay, what I'm offering them is, it's this educational intensive, and then there's an educational intensive every quarter or every month. There's a really great new nugget of learning. There's online meetings where people gather and get to know each other. It's ongoing. It's super valuable. I know that if I were sitting next to an entrepreneur on an airplane and I had a chance to explain what I do, they would sign up and they would love it because there's so much value. If you feel like that, that's when you can start marketing it. If you don't feel confident that they're going to stay, don't waste your money on turning on the loudspeaker. So that would be the first piece of advice I would give. Once you're confident and you turn on the loudspeaker, then you also want to be really working. Actually, maybe even before you turn on the loudspeaker, you also want to optimize the onboarding experience. So that's what happens. So I sign up for your program and what happens, right? Do I have to wait a week for you to process my check or do I immediately get access? Is it kind of confusing? Like there's so many things I could do, but I don't know where to go first. Or do you guide me to get value? Does it take a while to make friends in the community or find peers? Or does somebody call me and say, hey, I'm going to be your mentor and guide. Welcome to the community. So really thinking about how those first seconds, minutes, days after somebody joins your organization, what happens to them in those early interactions, that's super important because that's when somebody is still considering alternatives. And the great thing about membership is that people stop considering alternatives because they say, you're the one that's going to solve this for me, right? I'm not going to look to other thought leaders on entrepreneurship. I'm going to listen to your content. I'm going to be part of your community. But in the beginning, they're kind of thinking, well, is this going to be my advisor? Is this going to be my guru? Or, you know, am I going to keep looking, keep one foot out the door? So those would be a couple of tips that I would encourage people to consider. Making sure you have product market fit, making sure that you have a good onboarding process before you turn on the loudspeaker.
No, that makes perfect sense. And then definitely making sure that you are able to, I guess, test out your idea. And that's what happened during the process before you actually say, hey, we're live and this is what it is that we're doing. You kind of already have that data that you can kind of pull from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes awesome, awesome, awesome. And I know that you gave us tons of great advice. And obviously, you know, the book is an awesome resource for anybody that's thinking about membership economy. Are there any other things or any other pieces of advice that you would kind of give to entrepreneurs or business owners, our readers or our listeners?
I would really encourage them to keep investing in professional development, to keep learning. I mean, one of the hardest things about going it on your own is that there's no formal teaching built in. There's certainly like the school of life, but in terms of, you know, continuing to develop skills and expertise, I think it's really important to look to invest some chunk of your time to getting better. And whether that's by reading business books or by listening to podcasts or joining a community of like-minded entrepreneurs or establishing a mastermind group or taking classes, it's just really important that both for the sake of our business and also for the sake of our mental health, that we keep learning and keep exploring new ideas.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great words of wisdom. And the last question I had for you is if somebody's listening to this and they want to reach out to you and hear more about, you know, you and get a copy of your book, what's the best way for people to do that?
Well, the book is on Amazon, The Membership Economy, Find Your Super Users, Master the Forever Transaction, and Build Recurring Revenue. Get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, at your local independent bookstore. It's available all over the place in lots of languages and Audible and Kindle and all of that. There's lots of video content on my YouTube channel, Robbie Baxter. And you can hook up with me on, you know, follow me on Twitter, Robbie Bax, or on LinkedIn. You can follow me there as well. I post every day or two on LinkedIn. That's probably where I put most of my new content first. So hopefully those are some places where people can find me and connect. And I, you know, if you have a question, send it to me at LinkedIn and I'll do my best to respond.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Robbie. And we'll make sure to have all those links below in the show notes. But I just wanted to thank you again for giving us some great pieces of advice, things to think about when we're trying to build our membership community, and also just taking time out of your schedule to kind of enlighten our listeners.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Gresham.
All right. You have a good rest of the day.